Welcome to the Allowed Podcast. I'm Louise Steinman, curator of the Allowed series, presented by the Library Foundation of Los Angeles. Allowed is a series of dynamic lectures, readings, performances, and discussions that take place in the Mark Taper Auditorium at the historic Downtown Central Library in the heart of Los Angeles. To learn more about Allowed and learn how you can help the Library Foundation of Los Angeles support the Los Angeles Public Library, please go to our website, www.alloudla.org. The Allowed program you're about to hear was produced in 2009.
Anne Waldman is a poet, yes, she is a poet, but she doesn't exactly read poems. Nope. I'm guessing that she somehow ingests them first, the words work their way down into her body somehow and sit there in her bones, in her meat and skin. Anne Waldman may be poetry made flesh. And when it's time for the poetry to work its way out, that is, when it's time for it to manifest in some public kind of way, like tonight, for instance, well, it's unleashed. It's forced up out of her flesh with a kind of sublime violence. It's released from her body with a wailing and a squeaking, a moaning and groaning. Anne's animal becomes a vehicle for the delivery of a kind of shamanic showdown. The manatee, of course, is of a slightly different temperament, generally not known for the kind of outbursts of which Anne is beautifully capable. Let's just say that the manatee is of a more sedate nature. But the manatee suffers and seems to suffer in inverse proportion to its good, beneficent nature. In fact, it has been continually brutalized, its habitat systematically destroyed. The manatee's pain is fallout, the collateral damage sustained as the result of the inexhaustible human need to consume, among other things. Of course, this collateral damage extends far beyond the realm of the manatee to us humans as well. Anne Waldman gives voice to this suffering, whether it's mammalian or otherwise. Anne Waldman is generally considered a writer and performer of poetry, a collaborator par excellence, teacher, editor, scholar, and cultural political activist. She's been actively working towards keeping the world safe for poetry since the 60s. A longtime student of Buddhism and one of the founders of Naropa University in Boulder, Colorado, where she, Allen Ginsberg, Diane DePrima began the Jack Kerouac School of Disembodied Poetics in 1974. A distinguished professor and curator of poetry and poetics and a political cultural activist, Anne Waldman has been associated with the Beat Literary Movement and the New York School as a second generation lineage holder, as well as carrying forward the experimental strands of New American poetry. She ran the St. Mark's Church Poetry Project for a decade. Currently, she is the chair and artistic director for Naropa's summer writing program and is on the faculty of the New England College MFA program and an advisor to the new study abroad on the Bowery Project at the Bowery Poetry Club in New York City. She is the recipient of the Shelley Award, a former fellow of the Civitella Rainieri Center, and a recipient of a grant from the Foundation of Contemporary Performance Arts. She is the author of more than 40 collections of poetry and poetics, including Fast Speaking Woman, In the Room of Never Grieve, Marriage a Sentence, Outrider, Essay Poems, Interviews, and to be published this June, The Beats at Naropa. The way this is going to work tonight, Anne is going to perform, then we're going to have a short conversation, and then we're going to turn it over for Q&A, and then there'll be a book signing in the lobby. For the Q&A, please wait for the microphone to come your way because we record for podcasts and because we want to hear your voice, your question. Ladies and gentlemen, please join me in turning off your cell phones and in welcoming Anne Waldman to the Los Angeles Central Library.
Thank you, Justin. Thank you so much. And it's wonderful to be here. And tonight I'm going to read from the new book, Manatee Humanity, and perform some parts of it. And I'll be accompanied in a few sections, I think three sections, by some music by my son, Ambrose Bai. And in the final section, you actually hear the voice of the manatee. And then I'll close with a couple of other pieces. So very nice to be back here. This is a wonderful space, and I think it's supposed to have the best sound system in Los Angeles. Or just a few little quotes here to start off. And the manatee was often mistaken for a mermaid, would come out of the water with seaweed on its hair. So there's some accounts, some actual historical accounts of seeing what one thought was a manatee and was actually a mermaid and then was the manatee. So this is from a very end of Sir Patrick Spens, an old ballad. Out and starts the mermaiden with a fan into her hand. Keep up your hearts, my merry men, for you're near the dry land. Out and spake Earl Patrick Graham with a salt tear in his ee. Now sin we've seen the mermaiden, dry land we'll never see. And then from Blake, the wolf has a walk in this poem, as does the lemur. Was living, panting like a frighted wolf and howling. And from Loreen Niedeker, effort lay in us before religion at pond bottom. From Kamau Brathwaite, stealth bombers, ghost shrouds, Tibetan journeyings, spaces of time between magnets and continents, causeways into another continuum. The manatees found in shallow, slow-moving rivers. The manatee moves in estuaries, moves in saltwater bays. Undercurrent. This poem takes its initial inspiration from a particular initiation, teaching, or wang, literally empowerment, in the Tibetan Buddhist tradition, with links to a pre-Vedic shamanic ritual and from an encounter and meditation on the mysterious manatee, the endangered mammal of coastal waters, and the gray wolf residing particularly in the western United States. The poem emerged as a kind of urgent discourse. The Buddhist initiation is named Kalachakra, or Wheel of Time, and has been granted in recent years with accelerated frequency in both Asia and the West. The view is that such an initiation confers power and permission to enter into specific meditative practices of empathy. Tantra refers to a stream of continuity or thread. This ongoing stream is our own mind, which in the Buddhist view continues through lifetimes. At its subtlest level, the mind is known as primordial pure light. It presumably underlies every moment of experience, awake or asleep, like a radio that is always on, playing ceaselessly, even between bands or while turning into another frequency. Our mind is the basis for our experiences of death, our experiences in the bardo, which is the state between rebirths. Neither the possible static nor the volume or the particular station affects the fact that the radio is on. From a parallel perspective, neither the intensity of our experience nor the dramas of our discursive thoughts and moods affect this mind that is always on. Each stream of continuity is individual as well. All radios are not the same, although their receivers work the same way. In this view, there is no such thing as a universal mind in which all our minds participate, but rather myriad unique individual pathways, innumerable possibilities. One of Jack Spicer's metaphors for the poet is the radio. The poet is always on. And what is the mind of manatee? Was a question for this poem. There seems something wonderfully cognizant and primordial and on in the manatee spirit, albeit at a less speedy frequency. I remember William Burroughs sensing, maybe riffing on something Jack Kerouac had said, that so many animals seem to be in samadhi. He thought this of his cats, and he often said that he would prefer the company of lemurs to that of humans. The day a few years ago in Miami, when I spent several hours in the presence of a wounded manatee in a local sea park, was key to this project. I vowed to include manatee. I believe it was a she who had weathered human harm and neglect. She seemed an ancient soul and contemplative in her demeanor, huge, Buddha-like, and I fancied that I received transmission from her example, which was as a witness to cruel captivity. The Buddhist view is that all life forms are interrelated through their evolutionary history, and that the animal and human minds are both participants in reality. We share the planet with many non-human temporalities. Minds exist at the quantum level, both below the level of atoms and subatomic particles. As is said, minds never come from nothing or go to nothing. I visualize the manatee's realm in the shallow pool as a shrine. I perceived her less as a victim and more as a poetic deity, and I felt she had the greater sympathy for me. The manatee ostensibly has no use in this current world. It's odd how creatures, pacifistic, transcendent even, go extinct as human realms of cruelty, plunder, and war grind on. And why did my brain incubate all those long years? And why was it not using its genius to make fire? And why not art, the making of which would stir neurons further, and touching the texture of stone, shaping hand to stone, putting marks upon it further? And why not? Why to further beauty in the making of art? And why in sound, too, not making music all those long years? Sounds imitate what must have been the call of birds or of the body in internal hum and chatter and growl and chit and woo-woo-woo-woo. Parts of the body convening together as alluvial, as sound together, alluvial, alluvial, in strange harmony. Or discord too, or in hunger, need, desire, fighting in all the discords of desire and wooing too. Signal distress, signal delight, signal the stark moon you see, an eclipsing of it. Signal distress, signal delight, signal redress, mistress redress, and holy moon, and cry when the moon disappears, then returns and celebrate by dancing. Why? Did not my brain dance all those long years? Would this not be in the frame of that incubation, its calibration toward gender, toward yearning, toward other particulars of size and gaze and color? How many thousands of years in between all and what is human, thousands of possibilities constituting, reconstituting, thousands upon thousands? And why did my brain incubate all those long years not using its genius to make fire? Cry for water with a parched sound, and why, how could it with slow memory, without knowledge of itself, now growing, moving, slowly know itself? Why that the world keeps silent with long, vast, still silence, then grow into sound and sounding? No need for anything to grow, for my fingers grow from voice to the bubble grow natural of sound and sounding, that will to fight and grow, tongue to speak and know that love is reciprocated, and when injured to cry out in panic surely, and in coming to birth cry. Why did the brain incubate all those years? Why not using its incalculable genius to make fire? My, what size you are, my hominid, and of intellect not strewn about. Why are you at the root of my word lanthanean to escape notice? And why do you explore the periphery of latere to lie hidden inside a universe with a hidden dimension one tries curling up inside of? What if and why? And heard why not explore realms of where we meet? Olduan stone of a regular edge cuts another stone crudely. Stone of a regular edge cuts broodingly. Old woman, hold the blunt instrument to soothe thee, or Achillean more gracile hammer flakes off stone rue thee, and vocal in the cry of hunt, hunt, kill, kill, what? Kill thee? Primate, surprise. Chieftain, so named by Linnaeus. Survival mechanism, self-recognizing, prosimian, mirror, neuron. She stood up, shrill, hurried conversation, expressing sorrow. Oh, snared swan. Once in the mirror, backlit by sun, beauty, me, a snared swan, I excite you, gesticulate, modern, heterosexist, presumption not in place by candlelight. You are beauty, you moving up the ladder of the spine, and I, a fragmented me. Do mirrors have eyes? With bestial affection for you, of kin but no matter, of purpose shatter, would a shepherdess be in eclogue splendor if she could but be those cranial valleys and stars, both by kin of this action, lift hand, kind, palm, open, hands free for greater locomotion. Out on open savanna, slope of beckoning, move, swing, turn, grab, a kindred object. Cross-dressed body puts on syncretic pelt and moves as in plucky mating dance, stabs at promise, tongues, words, stand up looking eye to eye. Footprints at Laetoli, three Australopithecines crossed a carpet of fresh volcanic ash, walking much as we do in two-legged gait. Hip and leg gone much the way toward human form in place of what in apes suits them for swinging through trees, scamper on all fours across a line that leads to man, clutch a mind, his name in her heart again, sign off the distraction of his, her, one's monkey mind makes me wild again, donkey telephone, donkey strife, the saint in me abandoned, light rails of imperceptible emotion, supersonic lifestyle, jet off again, carbon hoof print. Chimp see, chimp do, a shell game. Find artifice, chimp. Know thyself in mirror recognition. Monkey under the scalpel, test monkey, task tedium monkey. Pity for you the long afternoons examining the validity of a hypothesis. Unplug monkey from the neuroscience machines. Such a cell might recognize a gesture, wave in jittery feeling tone. And would that thought be motor or sensory? And would that thought occur to you anyway, worrying your accounts and timesheets, below bedsheets, worrying your muscles and tendons, your sexual prowess? Please water the mirror of these thoughts. And recent pictograms from Tigris and Euphrates were the origin of this poem 5,000 years ago, and you were suddenly outside what you thought you saw, a gazing one, watcher, seer, maiden of the laboratory with shock wires, probes, calibrating tools, measuring what you are not, what was just in there, not lost, but what went wobbly, water-tailed, winged, where language held your hand in two freighted kinship. Eureka! I got it, my mind, Eureka, I got it, Eureka, I got it, my mind, a net of jewels, diamonds of alliance or dalliance, skin grows back invisibly. They were called thunderstones, a kind of folk etiology. They were thought to be lightning strikes or elf-shot missiles, hominids of the lower Paleolithic on whom the leopard prey knew this. And it moves into this dream section. They decided to walk to the ferry boat now. The map of the lakes lay on the table. She picked up the book close by, setting the map aside, and as she approached it now closely, now looking at it, she was happy to see, and she did this quickly, lifted as she was by the title, the photographs within. Walls, a superimposition of a she-wolf's face. It was a book by a friend, the name of a friend clearly on it, whose writing she admired. It was lateral writing, a kind of meditation on the detritus and refuse and vast sweep of time's ravage upon many great cities, diasporas of visible and invisible migrations, subsequent incursions that make their curious, desperate mark on the faces of cities. A photo of the friend stares out squarely, defiant, she might say, knowing him, but perhaps not, more certain of the credibility of line and park and point and puncture and fury. He was one to walk a lot and comment upon the certainty of seething and exploding peoples, of people pulled to the maelstrom of survival, of them pushing and pulling, tug at this, what you say, string, a lifeline, and back streets, places by water, melancholy survival deals that dealt a raw hand. He had traveled to the undersides of them indefatigably and lived in the interstices, watching those cities below her imagination. What he had seen below the imagination. He had seen odd delineations of fear and seething and exploding, juxtaposed with mad delight of martyrdom, how implodes everywhere, the ethos by any necessary means. He meant they were crowded like rats or like the circumpolar people living under the sea, ghosts consisting of only a head, ghosts waiting to be buried off the killing fields of Srebrenica. Darker districts outside Paris, where the trouble they complain of arrives from. She thought of semaphores. He was trying to tell her something with his signals, with his codes and flags, where they might measure. Distress, distress could measure. Help them now, signal distress. It was words, words only now. Here, the ferry close by, within walking from their temporary shelter, he was of the words only school, then turning words to movies, those moving pictures impersonating shadows, a moving picture school, and movies, movies only, for you could tell in light he would say words, and he liked them dark, transgressive even. And what are you wishing on? I mean, working, working on, he asked, chewing on the mammal. It was like an hallucination. First, the objects strewn about where they had arrived from, a book, a map, quadrants now, a sense of the shelter and the departing from it, map cast aside, they would try their luck. His caverns of cities, weight of them in him, in her mind now. They had sat with their lunch on another ferry, Lago di Como, animal bereft, lithic underpinnings. And the writing they both did took you to those other places, waves on the Bosphorus, Istanbul or Cambodia. They both wrote as if in the grip of a fever. Have you ever had the terrible dengue? Because of urgency, survival to describe the known world of any reach or stretch of imagination. The relative world of death and change, with the machinations of capitalism grinding away, charged a mysterious brute force in decimation, deracination. Was her time irreversible? How many objects put to the test, taken apart, deconstruct them into their essential nature? Compassion! Name outliving the person who carries it, as with a book. Name, identity, person, and have you heard, he asked, of the continent of detritus, 100,000 pounds of petroleum plastic, twice the size of your continent, he was not American-born, churning in a vortex, and the water animals under the intense burden of naming, how else we know them, by their sound, by their cry, struggling in the serpent coils of plastic, marred, scarred, and she wondered what animals must be sacrificed to the colonization of time. To the colonization of cities, colonization of oceans, of planets. Net, exactly, the purpose. And he, there is a world, that is enough. Start here. Like to go there, he said, with you, he said, and picking up her thought, like wind's cognition, said again, what is unmistaken? And she, I know him, I know my friend, by looking at him, wondering what animal traps, the what of animal cages and troops, we saw them embarking in the distance, what traps the troops and torture unseen, but you see it in the mind, most impossible a subject which becomes a trapped factor of life, mere trappings, razor wires, meant torching, meant lynching and summoning animals to the hunt, dressed in their skins with gestures and sounds from the vibrating larynx. Sing of becoming them, being them, eating them, animals of troubled descent, or sewing the starflower shirts by which the birds would be brought back to human shape. It was a time of fossil fuel priorities. A precious business time. That's what they'll say about us centuries hence. It was a busy time. Get on with it. Business time. So better get on with it time. They fucked us all over in their greedy get over it time. That's what they'll say about us. What were they thinking? Stupid fuckers. It was commodification fun hog time. Time modification time. Got on with time. We kill time. They fucked us over in our future time. We'll be surely more stressed in time. That's what they'll be saying. That's what they'll say. They got on with it, saying about us going nowhere but going down and us all with them. What were they thinking in their selfish minds? Us, us. That's what they'll say about us generations hence. How living then hence without so many animals then? They fucked the world over in their sweet, avaricious time frame. That's what they'll say about us, those stupid fuckers. They let the animals die. They let the plants die. They killed the air, they killed the water, they killed each other, they killed language. Humdrum Paleolithic, where we would talk in sweet climb notches. Well, that's over. Where did that ever evolve to? Then along 20,000 years of keeping time, once keeping it for all and moving it, time forward and it, the art forward and it, humanity forward. And now they want to kill it. Really, they killed it. Then along rim of Babylonian, rim of Egyptian, 5,000 years once ago, such progress, they killed all that too. Then but now, my solar day, my lunar month, my solar year, my speed I inherited from them. What time is it now? And we resumed our talk after these excessive outbreaks, discussing the nature of calibration, how different times give the peculiarities and particulars of people and praxis in place. We spoke of lustrations and the architectures of spiritual places, of constructing mandalas with colored sands and women who dance on the periphery of eclipses, performance and ritual under arches, pillars that delineate the way to move as a chorus might, open atriums. They are moving into the augur's space, the place of frequent animal sacrifice. We're Mire, we're Mire, we're Mire, we're Mire, sidereal time. Two passages of the mean sun time, he cautioned, and that is relative. Both, he cautioned further. It's quite relative. That doesn't explain, I protested, the way we brutalize time. You may want to consider how an animalistic year is the interval between two successive passages of the earth through the perihelion. And this might be the year the four-legged animals take fright and hide. She knows herself. She knows herself. She's counting coup, the sexual frenzy, sexual priority. She knows herself. If you could imagine, said again, imagine knowing Elfkin. She knows herself. Everyone a partner in the dream. Everyone a wolf in the dream. The imagine being a kind of animal in knowing, in the body of, or resumed of knowing, of large swimming animals. If you might swell to it, imagining kind or heroic, but knowing, knowing, need, in knowing of kind, morph to empathy. She knows herself, counting sex group. Abandon knowing you are not the gnosis of that word, counting. Count what is gap between, but never calculating. Not a pest, take the measure. She is standing tall, stood up on a leg. She is standing tall, came together upright. All the personalities of the person to stand up tall. She takes the worried look off her face. She locks it in a music box. She folds it up, fragile skin in the music box. Tomorrow the thick skin she wears, affirming, which is thought in kind of no beginning. Said stead or person that could move, resuming identity. Show the day, person instead of out and out, mind of animal instead of condition. Do no slaughter, do not presume to slaughter. She lives for emotions, she lives for emotions. Her passion is not an analytic mind. Dear big oil, get out of here. Dear big oil, out of the picture. I'm performing at you, out, out. We're watching you, big oil, out, out. She's standing in performance, at her seconds of suffering and in eternity cycles of revenge, standing tall on legs performing, saying this about big oil, out, out. The musculature of voice, she's counting coup, time increments, memory, lifetime memory, a lifetime better that big oil be out. And then resume, would see, pretend to see, would pretend then see. The other way around, pretending. She adrift, beams of light. She adrift, beams of light. Performs all manners of speakings. Immune, not doubt, presume that you never, never immerse in urgency. In the aboriginal memory, how presume to doubt? Astronomy, how many light years back or forward could you go? Flip the elliptic, flip the ecliptic, placental mammal, flip the ecliptic. More planets than you think in that big, big brain of yours, shadowy. And would there be consciousness lurking there? One planet might hide another, or one's planet might hide another. Open grasslands, Open grasslands standing on her spine. Open water. Will he have her? Will he have her? Will he have her? Will he hold her? Will he have her drop by drop? Secrets of battle drop by drop. Does no slaughter, daughter of mercy, daughter of light. This is leaking drop by drop. Her regenerative time abandoning this time. Humanity is found in shallow, slow-moving rivers. The manatee moves in estuaries, moves in saltwater bays. The manatee in moving moves gently. The manatee is to be found in canals and coastal areas. The manatee is a migratory animal. The manatee is gentle and slow-moving. The manatee moves in slow-moving rivers slowly. The manatee is completely herbivorous. The West Indian manatee has no natural enemies. The manatee has no natural enemies, but a natural man. The manatee is constantly threatened by man, unnaturally. Man with his boats and plastic and attitude. Can we turn that up to hear the voice of the manatee? The manatee often drowns in canal locks of man, man who makes no concession to manatee. The manatee often dies in flood control structures, man who makes no concession to manatee. Nor cares of manatee life, manatee fortune. The manatee dies in collision with watercraft, man who does not protect the manatee. What steward of the earth is this unnatural man, man who makes no concession to manatee? The manatee dies with the ingestion of fish hooks, man who unnaturally makes no concession. The manatee dies from litter and monofilament lines. Man, who is rank in attitude and has no use for manatee. The manatee dies entrapped in crab trap lines. The manatee dies from loss of habitat claimed by man. The manatee is maimed by man. The manatee could be aided by man. Man, oh, aid the manatee. Come to the manatee heart. A manatee calf is born every 2 to 5 years. A manatee gestates for a year in the manatee womb. 8,400 miles of tidal waters could be for the manatee. 11,000 miles of rivers and streams could be for the manatee. 10,000 miles of canals, would they all be for the manatee? The manatee has more gray matter in the brain than man. The manatee is perhaps thinking archivally deeper than man. Ancient days of manatee, so many thousands of years. Manatee mind, what is the mind of manatee? The manatee has no natural enemies. The manatee is completely herbivorous. The metabolism of the manatee is slow, moves slowly. The manatee moves in estuaries, moves in saltwater bays. The manatee moves in slow-moving rivers. The manatee is gentle. The manatee offspring nurses for up to 2 years. The manatee learns everything from the manatee mother. The manatee mothers and offspring sing to one another. The manatee have large ear bones, chirps, whistles, squeaks of the manatee. The manatee in moving slowly moves gently. Oscillations sounds of the manatee moving between manatee ears. Ears of the manatee mother and manatee offspring. Manatees are our sirenians and live in the house of the sirens. Where are the human sanctuaries for manatee? Manatees, mermaids, sirens singing, move slowly. The manatee mother and calf so bonded, female manatee bonded with her just one manatee offspring. The manatee is found in shallow, slow-moving rivers. The manatee moves in estuaries, moves in saltwater bays. The manatee in moving moves gently. The manatee is to be found in canals and coastal areas. The manatee is a migratory animal. The manatee is gentle and slow moving. The manatee moves in slow moving rivers slowly. The manatee is completely herbivorous. The West Indian manatee has no natural enemies. So that's the some of the Manatee Project. Do a few more pieces here. Neuro-linguistically, this is the writing dance. This is the writing dance, or a plumed helmet which itself resembles a heart in the shape of Africa. Continents, continents, the challenge is to question the warrior. Get inside his, her armor. Get inside the land which has no boundary. We could talk about China now, its economics, its technocrats, its ecological suffering, the backdoor deals. We could be happily Canadian, but could we really? We could talk about Liberia, Darfur, Zimbabwe, suffering everywhere in Congo, and our own backyard. Safe, starlet, stomp on it right now, out on that turf. This is the obsequious politician flattering you. You never believe him, never the eminence of philosophy, so crenellated, so terraced, pronouncing the name of your dance. Down with a tyrant! That is the gesture in the name. Down with a tyrant! Down with his exaggerated thunder. You want to talk psychosis? Down with a tyrant. Daggers, hysterical Puritans, starving animals. You want to? You want to? You want to talk? You want to write? This is the writing dance, written for all to see, the whole picture of the decimated site, the picture of charnel ground, and the jackals came, and the jackals came. Sift, sift through the body parts. See the back of his head? Would a gesture knock him off, or is he too steely-eyed? Eyes look through the head. Inside there, the little screen. The trick is to dance upon it. The dance I was doing is the written dance. To be a barker, be a noisemaker, be a saint. Tools, linen, weapons, wires, women creating sainthood, place hands together and bow. This was the written dance. Eyes looking back on themselves before growing cold. Check out the moon, check out all the characters. The philosopher, for example, her window of the room, the guy ready to blast his M16, the naturalist with steely gaze, dark streets out there. Is that what I see? Is it written? No, this is the smitten dance, flying over the occupied territories. Don't talk to me about transgression anymore. This is the trespass dance. This is the way I get down for it. It's my power structure to strangle Dick Cheney. Strangle Dick Cheney. Strangle Newt Gingrich. Avaunt thee, thou Gingrich euphemisms. And if I were a scientist, I would scream in my scientist voice, neurons, neurons. I would say it again and again the way the neurons like to be commended and commented upon. Dear neurons, you can be so kind. I would say, elephants, move like this, neuro-linguistically. And snakes move like that, and hyenas are shrieking at the body politic. And if I were a Sufi, I might spin out of control. This is not the terra firma dance. This is not the map of the capital materialist junta dance. This is the writing dance. Ida Lupino liked it. She wanted the script to go on. Many of the women stars of another era were never confused about priorities. They had their stage directions, their moves, their maps. They had their songs, their gestures, their postures, and they performed for a silver screen. They had their desires, and their sky was covered with a thin layer of clouds. Everything was quiet and still when they came on the set. It was like a scene of tranquil poetry. It was a scene you had to have been there as it got written, and the one who emerged, who lingered, was the one you pointed to, was she. She who had been stalling with feet like the feet of many different animals and with eyes in all the pores of their pelts and voices sounding as only she could as them and mapping and changing the way the writing would go. If it were a dance, you might wonder. And this is called Problem Not Solving. Old way back o'er Palestine, what of its rip and tears, its tears and weeping, its ghetto? I mark this for you. I sound this for you, tears and weeping of ghetto, of Gaza. Problem not solving. Why problem not solving? And of Zion in metal of poem time, in scripture of 21st century wind time, new year 2009 time. Why problem not solving? Problem not solving. Long-range rocket revenge toward Ashkelon. How many dead? Not so many dead in Ashkelon, but any death too many of death and woundings dead in Ashkelon. Remember Gaza, life ripped apart in Gaza, problem not solving in Gaza. Fine elliptical gallery for women only. Sit here, mothers and sisters, sisters and children, in your problem not solving. Why, problem not solving, describe the body parts you sifted from trees, from the scattered trees of Zion, of Gaza, dry dust of trees, the trees now decimated, trees of Gaza, three wells of Zion, scattered trees of Zion, what of the trees of Zion, three ways to undream the nightmare, the dear dead body parts, enter the dream, the nightmare of ghetto, of Gaza, and the end of ghetto. And say three times, I will not do to them what has been done to me. I will not do to them what has been done to me. I will not do to them what has been done to me. A side hits Sedrat with grad rockets from Iran. What side? What sides? What asides? Problem not solving. Problem not solving. Old vision of unsolved Israel, unsolved Palestine, and building up arsenals with arms. Reach out, human and fleshly. I will lament here. I will lament here and reach out arms, human and fleshly. Problem not solving, problem not solving, but reach out arms to ghetto, to Gaza. And I'll do a piece called Ajanta. This is also with music by Ambrose Bai. And this piece actually was a journal kept during a visit to the Ajanta Caves. Maybe some of you know those caves near Aurangabad. It's a bit of a trip from Mumbai. And I came back with just these notes, which also included a conversation with a filmmaker whose name happened to be Kabir. So there's a Kabir in the poem. We were talking about the Middle East situation. So it's notes from inside the cave. There are particular architectural terms, the vihara, the chaitya, talk about some of the images on the caves. There's one sort of area where there's a kind of Buddhist map laid out and the idea of these kinship among forms of life and reincarnating to Buddhahood, and then references back to Mumbai, where I was spending a little time. So this is Ajanta from the caves, and you enter with a flashlight, and you're only allowed to have it on brief amount of time, or you can sometimes you're allowed to light a match So you get this sort of flash, and I was trying to get the kind of gasp of the experience. So if I have the breath, I'll try to do the gasp. And that's what my son picked up on. He said, we should make this somehow musical. Okay, Ajanta. Pierce through torchlight, you enter, exit. You restore from the street your text of displacement. You delineate the Vihara, the Chaitya, rock-cut replicas of wooden architecture of the day, apsidal halls of secular communities and guilds, a hall built like the inside of a whale. Modernity, the conception of secular desire, all sides, the power of cave or belly. War interrupts cave. War interrupts woman exiting her cave. Pakistani girl asks, are you traditionally clad from Vancouver, lives with her Muslim grandparents in Aurangabad, hidden behind pale blue scarf with filaments of ornamental gold. Ajanta. Industry to all sorts responds, the listener to all sorts, the buyer, the traveler, the money market account, and hawkers desperate for coins sell jagged, glinting crystals from nearby hills. To all sorts, action claims collectivity, and yet the buds of this crystal play an action with light. Natural delineation of grace. Exit the cave and animals reincarnate to Buddhahood. Kinship among all forms of life, marginal, all strata depicted on walls, pauperized, all strata, Dharavi slums of Mumbai. Less good reason, a treason of them and company, less good a territory, refuge in a cave off the street, and Kabir took me to a rectangular sacred pool in the middle of the city where everything sounds different, muted. And we said, the creeps from Contra back in their loud arrogance. And he said, and U.S. rushed request from Israel for more than 1,300 U.S.-made M26 cluster bombs, and how the reshaping of the Middle East destabilizes us all. And I said, and the street action in January, and the railroad bombing on the Peace Trail, Delhi to Lahore, windows barred, you can't escape. And Kabir said, xenophobia. And I, complex conflagration, each a world apart until you recognize Palestine. And we said, the dis of slaughter, the dis of displacement, and global and human and Habermas, rip into the cortex. Terra verde, red and yellow ochres, lamp black, lapis lazuli, all went to make this paint. Clay mixed with rice husk and gum, and then a coat of lime applied for smoothness. A pigeon being chased by a hawk who says it's his lawful prey takes refuge with a king who cuts out an equal piece of flesh from his own body and rips into the secular. At the airport in Beirut during the Six-Day War, a submachine gun to the Dakini's head, slowly chipping away at artifice, the top of the woman's shoulder lifts as a lid, and the phantom juice pours in to make her run, 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 keep run, run, running on empty, run, 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 paddle. Of oil for the asking, and is it religare or religari? Run, run, run. And I asked, what is it worth? And Kabir said, run on your own juice where images are forbidden, and you have the mystical dome, the mystical stupa, primordial shapes of mind on fire. Thank you. Again, music by Ambrose. And I wanted to read a brief poem for the wonderful artist George Schneeman, a dear friend who passed away in January. He collaborated with a lot of poets, and I also wanted to dedicate the reading to the wonderful poet Robin Blazer, who's at this moment probably breathing his last. He's in a hospice in Vancouver and surrounded by friends who are close to him. So thinking of Robin a lot of today. And this is for George Schneeman, whose work can be seen on various sites. The Poetry Project newsletter in New York had a terrific pieces of people, you know, other people's poems and pieces about him and some of his images. And we're trying to get the work out into the public space more. So this is Tell Me About It for George Schneeman. And he spent equal time in Italy and in New York. And we were neighbors starting in 1968 on St. Mark's Place. And his home was always open for collaboration and bowls of pasta and poker games. Anything suffused with light, soft brown hair and eyes, soft yet unflinching in 100 portraits, anything sitting, walking, musing in light blue or sturdy in plaids, anything with lips, you are a winner of fantasies in paint. They come to you in pretty detail, ordinary spending, essential things, a spool of thread, anything. Anything is possible with an eye to poetry. Dante spilling across a platter, rain of blood, of tears, manifesting the heartbroken you. I hear you say, it's so beautiful. Puff on a cigar and make a sudden gesture in the guest's direction, an articulation of generosity or argumentation. It's this way. No, it's this way, George. Are you kidding me? Yes, and it's not the first, final, middle, between, over and above, outside the head, inside the studio, behind the eyes, time, you or I mean. Why don't you drop by more often? There's no time not to be on the job, abrasive. I tell myself as if I'm you, you, the terrifying example of discipline, stubbornness, workmanship, to be a maker of something. Would I were as productive as you. I made a baby, I made dinner, I made a motion, I made a book, but I didn't paint anyone's eyes or put animals on delicate cups or libertines on vases. I didn't show my whole sex ever like that. I didn't grow up in Minnesota or live in Siena under a lush sun close to the ground, but came organically out of a city, another hybrid, homegrown. Our mothers die and we are suddenly finite, as if everything that extended beyond us, in front of us, is now a dream. This is a dream of great spaces, endless dimensions, and empty frescoes and canvases and pages and big, sore swelling. Here come the tears again, heart. The mothers were so spunky. I am a naughty girl again, and you're the cantankerous son of the woman at rest, uneased to plunk it down, embarrassed by richness. How to say anything like, hey, I just found out something. Okay, so tell me about it. Anything that in paint speaks around a situation, all the circles. Anything is didactic if I speak this way, seeming to be casual, as if I just dropped over myself to pick something up, drop off a book, someone's birthday, a dinner, rare footage on TV. I slept in your same room between hospital visitings. You were right there. There you are. I don't have to ask, help me lug something large up the stairs. Help me be practical. I don't have to ask, do I? I watch you pedal down St. Mark's Place. Anything tense between a double image, you and me, is going on. Split so we can touch noses, forefingers, tease and go away again. I am the messenger and you are the little god. You make the world happen, make the small people dance, ride bicycles, kiss and make love forever, circumambulating like a clock of Oz, anything like angels in the gorgeous sky or denizens of hell. You do this, you have to. I'm going to close with a little bit from the ongoing Iovis epic project, which includes in book two sort of the Sprechstimme, Spoksung section for John Cage, and then it's coming back in the final book. So this is a long poem I've worked on probably over 25 years now, and it's very much for the page, but then it breaks into sound. So this is, I'll just do a little bit of the cage section, and then we'll go to our little Q&A and discussion. So just a few lines of this. Dear John Cage, it was a metal contradictory was meeting you to do lunch. If you ever could do anything, do lunch. Do a book, do moving. You were moving with the slower ones. Did it, what bounce? Did it, I said, did it, bounce, bounce. Or words can do it like sleep. John Cage, he can really sleep. I mean, oh, he can really sleep. Oh, I mean, what? To be seated and happy, half over. To get far away as that, but he can really sleep. Yogan, please don't go. What say of my argument? What say? Meet Friday, Lamartine, poet of politics, to quote, these times are of chaos, bounded terminology, opinions are a scramble, parties are a jumble, the language of ideas, new ideas, new ideas, new ideas, nothing is more difficult than that. Have a good definition in philosophy, in politics. Say, is it to be said? Say, is it to be said and understood? It is spoken, spoken. Are you ready? Your preparedness? I am not. I let my liberty go. Dear John Cage, fall away. He invites my voice in as we fall away. 9:10 p.m., he invites my voice in. Ah, 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 did you say it? What? What was it? A savant's dream, unsteady, unsteady. No, it was a crystal thing. It was a steady thing. It was a sure thing. Dear John Cage, oh, time me. What? Time me. Who is a man, a cage? Who is a woman, not were? Who is a man, not caged? Who is a woman, not were? Were. Thank you.
Thank you.
Thank you.
Thank you for coming.
Thank you.
It's nice to have your voice in Los Angeles.
Thank you.
So I thought I'd start with the manatee.
Okay.
You met a manatee, is that right?
Yes. Well, I was in Florida, actually, and Jeb Bush had taken the manatee off the endangered species list. And I felt somehow this was a way into some work, a meditation really on something about our evolution, our connection from the Buddhist perspective to other, these what I call them, non-human elementals. And so I just read a bit of the poem actually, and it turned into this project I worked on about 3 years. And the opening is sort of into evolution, prosimian behavior, mirror neurons, thinking about the brain, that early part I read about the brain incubating, how long it took. And also it goes into the larynx, why did it take so long to speak and to have language. And then, it meanders. And then there's several dreams that came out of this particular Buddhist, it's called the Kala Chakra Initiation, where you're given specific implements, a kusha grass, which is a type of grass, and you put it under your pillow and under your mattress, and you remember those dreams, and then they become this sort of guide. So the narrative section, when I'm talking, there's a conversation that all comes out of this dream experience. And so those are woven in. And, you know, I see it as a sort of narrative. There's a definitely a, and that's unusual. Most things are more rhizomic or collage-like, these longer pieces. So there's definitely a point of departure and moving through the sort of evolutionary history and then coming to the part. And that part where the manatee, the song of the manatee, I call it, is maybe halfway through. And then, you know, moves through there. So it, I wanted to, for a number of reasons, sort of think about these things. And
but you even going. Said, I think in the book you even say that you felt as if you were almost receiving transmission from it. I mean, there was...
Yeah, some kind of, you know, connection. I stood there at the theme park, and the manatee was quite isolated in its own little... you know, cut tub of water, and we just were looking at each other in the eyes, and all these things are true. They're not. They're so gentle and herbivorous and all that. And then I sought them out in other places. There's one. I think it's in a aquatic park, but enclosed in Cincinnati. And they're seen as these ugly creatures. They're totally useless. What are they good for? I think there was a 50s. TV show that made fun of the manatee. I mean, it's just always been this source of ridicule and weirdness, and yet, you know, something lumpy and strange. So I wanted to, you know, create the manatee as a sort of deity, something I could learn from.
And as a vulnerable sort of...
Yes, well, they're completely, you know, this manatee was very, very scarred from, you know, I was living in this area where motorboats just have, you know, go in these areas where the manatee are living and breeding, and they get caught in this monofilament line, the blades of the, you know, the motors wound them. So this particular manatee seemed very old and quite scarred, and so, yet, poignantly present.
So if we can protect these very vulnerable, docile, gentle animals, these giant, gentle things, mm-hmm. then maybe if we can protect the manatee, then maybe there's some hope for humanity.
Yes.
Right?
And, okay. And the manatee is a kind of stand-in for all endangered. And the poem is, in fact, dedicated to, some of you might have known, Carrie Edwards, wonderful poet who went to Naropa. Had gone through this, you know, transgender operation, had been, that was a rough road, and then was very integrated into the community, our community there, and in, you know,
San
the
Francisco
larger literary
as well.
Community in San Francisco, and also Stephen Lowe, who some of you might know here. I know Gordon Baldwin and others knew Stephen Lowe, who worked in...
he was a Burroughs assistant.
Assistant to William Burroughs for a long time, and a brilliant collector. He could create these extraordinary environments, and he was
recently passed.
Recently passed several years ago.
Yeah.
AIDS related. So that, you know, I felt that them both as these, and Stephen's death affected me very profoundly, and I saw him as a kind of endangered. Mind and sort of quirky brilliance, and he was incredibly entertaining and quixotic and wild imagination. So I saw these two friends as endangered species as well.
Right. Well, you know, I wanted to also ask you a little bit about lineage, because I went to Naropa, and Anne has been a bit of a mentor to me over the years, and was something that's very really stressed at Naropa is a sense of lineage, and I wanted to talk to you about the get a sense of your own lineage,
bring very individual things to the work and early influences. I mean, I feel very inspired by particularly women singers and voices, from Kalsum to Shubha Lakshmi to I'm very curious about other musics from other places, and particularly women singers and that sort of thing. But I also feel very connected to what is referred to as the New American Poetry and its various entwined lineages, and that, of course, includes the more what I call outrider worlds, these sort of experimental worlds of poetry that, build on the modernists and a lot of things. I mean, ethnopoetics is in the mix now, Dharma, all kinds of things, but specifically this sense of a community that was very active in the 40s, 50s, 60s, and I had the great good fortune to encounter at the Berkeley Poetry Conference in 1965, where I saw Allen Ginsberg was there, Charles Olson, Robert Duncan, Spicer was around, many others, Ed Dorn, Ted Beck, but they were mostly guys. But I was 20 years old at the time, and I loved the discourse. I loved the conversation. I loved the mix of performance, the rawness of the work. Certainly Olson's projective verse was a very important text, manifesto, so much more. I mentioned Robin Blazer earlier, the work of Spicer. And then Alan and I started working together, and we were very much on a kind of path of activism and connection to Buddhism. And that was all going on even around the days of the Poetry Project. But, the idea came to come for a summer festival in this strange little town of Boulder, Colorado, a little bubble town.
Tibetan
Buddhist-inspired institute then, now university, but it was just getting started. And suddenly there was an invitation to create, a poetics school, which was extraordinary. I mean, nobody asks you to write poetry, let alone, create a poetics school. And there was a very famous meeting with Trungpa and Alan, Diane De Prima, John Cage, Jackson McClough, and others, and talking about this vision of a non-competitive school, non-competitive based sort of view and spacious, not that you had to be Buddhist or join a particular cult, but, very open to a certain view. And Trungpa suddenly said, it's a 100-year project at least. And both Alan and I felt it was like Shaktipat. And it was like, whoa, who's talking about a 100-year project? In 1974, that was really interesting. And having been involved with, political work and, sort of community work on the Lower East Side and other places and, traveling a bit by then, this seemed a very interesting place to put one's energy. And so that was the sort of beginning of the, and there's some Kerouac School people I'm so happy to see. In a while. And I'm so proud of them. I mean, these people go out in the world, they go to China, they create community wherever they are, they're active as small press publishers, they open art galleries, they study Buddhist chaplainism.
Chaplainism. Charlie Chaplainism, I
think. And work with the healing arts. People here involved with dance and psychology go to Brazil and make movies. People doing capoeira. I mean, it's just incredible. There are people in this room who could speak about Ronnie Singh, amazing, who was very connected to community, who worked with Harry Smith, one of the great geniuses of the last century, and Into the Future, made a whole film around his work and the resonance of his work. I mean, I'm going to start crying. There's so much brilliance and generosity in this room. And that was the whole point. So lineage, I mean, I feel like the people here are part of this lineage, and I think Naropa became a place where you could live your work. And the poetry community, yes, is this kind of sangha or spiritual community. And as artists, we keep, there's a lot of exchange of work and working collaboratively, and then infrastructure poetics working on projects. So while the New American Poetry had these communities going, I think to take it a step further in terms of how to keep bringing this sort of thing into public space, working together in a, ever increasingly troubled world, really working on with a certain kind of vision, where also the work has to, the work is needs to be rigorous.
And if we're not out there, keeping the world safe for poetry, then
what else is it safe for?
Right,
it can't be safe
right.
for poetry and the manatee. So, when people get angry, what does that mean? World safe for poetry? There are all these other things. I know, but I think it's sort of funny. Keep the world safe for poets.
Well, we need
again,
our poets, right? We need
absolutely.
The poets are...
Well, it's the imagination. We need imagination. This is what's so at risk. And I mean, it's so refreshing to have such intelligence at the helm of our, you know, government at this time. But it's so precious. We have to realize how precious it is, that it might not last forever, that kind of... I mean, you know, one feels the lift and the, you know, the intelligence of speech and...
And they're the kind of
honesty
conscience of the culture.
Right.
Sort of, right. Well, I think we should open it up to
sure.
a few questions really quick, and then we'll go to the book signing. Do we have any questions?
Yes. Fine.
Here comes the microphone.
Oh.
Oh, he's got flowers.
Oh, that's so
small. I think those are for me, Anne.
Makes me sad you talk about Robin Blaser, because I drove Robin Blaser and Allen Ginsberg to your house for a potluck in Boulder. So that,
Well, just think, you know, send good thoughts. Yeah, he's had an amazing life, incredible work, touched so many people.
Well, that's what I want to say. You've influenced my life beyond words, and I brought about 30 students here.
Oh, thank you.
So you talked about your legacy. What can you pass on to this legacy that's now seen you, and what words do you have for the youth of the world?
Be kind. Be kind. Be kind to one another, and do your work. It's so important. We're making art. I mean, you know, it's so fringe, really, in the bigger scheme of things. And so I think of it, you know, you have to think of it as a real spiritual practice. And it's good to have a community, because it's hard to do it alone, and maybe harder than it was, you know, some years ago. And just to, you know, really think clearly, think about what you're putting out there, you know, what can have a certain salutary effect. I mean, I'm not saying we're all writing therapy poems and feel good, and I love you, you're so beautiful, poems. But, you know, really being rigorous with one another, you know, no idiot compassion, you know, not to let people get away, and be mindful, you know, just of what's around you, and travel, and you learn languages, and don't get locked into some, you know, career that where you're just on this tenure track. And that's over, maybe. I don't know. There's still going to be a tenure track. Might be over. So you have to think of new forms, and, you know, maybe some things are going to be obsolete after this grand recession. But thinking creatively, I mean, think, you know, even historically, thinking about the WPA projects and things that occurred, I mean, if that hadn't happened at that time, we'd be, you know, the poorer. Some good work. So, you know, and make demands and organize for visions you have. Don't get cynical or nihilistic. You know, it's all going to be over in 500 years. I had this argument with my son. You know, meanwhile, he's, you know, making all this music and we're working together, but it's all going to be over in 500 years. What's the point? What's the point? And I quoted Henry David Thoreau, who at the end of his life, somebody, and I started the argument with my son where I said, what do you think, you know, where do you think the future's going? And he went into this rant. But Henry David Thoreau, at the end of his life, was asked, what do you see into the future? And he said, one world at a time. It's pretty powerful. I mean, you could read it a number of ways. I took it as me, you know, let's take care of, and also some sense of there have been other worlds before us, you know.
Any more questions? Oh, over here? Way over here.
I was really surprised to hear you talk about John Cage, because I don't really know your work that well.
Uh-huh.
And as an often sort of dumb person just kind of approaching the I Ching, do you have any advice for getting into that madness?
I Ching, that path, you mean? Well, I've always found it useful, because it gave another imagination. You know, point of view, and the whole idea of the chance operation, the luck of the draw, you know, the way you throw the coins, and even though it might not seem relevant to question you're asking. It's a kind of meditation. No, he was extraordinary in his work, of course, and I heard him in many different, you know, occasions doing different kinds of performance and music. One concert, John Cage was actually plucking cactus needles that were amplified. It was incredibly beautiful. And, you know, again, a kind of meditation on manatee humanity. I mean, on that level of just getting in there with some other kind of sound. So, I mean, you might be interested in his work and what he derived from, you know, thinking about chance operation and that sort of thing, and also get deeper into that practice of I Ching, you know, knowing where it, sort of how it originates and different ways to use it. It's often interesting to do with, you know, at Naropa every year at the New Year, usually it's the, you know, Tibetan New Year, we do a group I Ching, and then there's somebody to interpret it. She's a Native American scholar who himself being Native American and also has this practice. And so then he interprets it for the whole community. So that's interesting. So it can be used, you know, individually, but also in a group. Is that helpful? Good.
Maybe one more question.
I'll answer anything. Oh, Jen, another brilliant person in the room.
I only raised my hand so you would say how brilliant I am. I was wondering if you could talk a little bit about the experience of working on an epic project for so long, and if you ever, I'm thinking about sort of the refractory experience of revising thought that happens as we sort of move through experience.
Right.
And when you look back on something you maybe wrote 20 years ago and think differently about that thing now, but it's part of a project you're still working on, how do you approach that, sort of accepting the history mm-hmm. that's inherent to writing, but also trying to revise that history as mm-hmm. you continue writing?
Well, I wanted to take on the epic form, which is traditionally a male form, singing the praises of heroes who've done battle and so on. So that was the idea, take on... This is the Iovis project, literally of Jove, the generative. And it started sometime in the 80s, I guess. And then it moved, you know, it's in three parts. I'm finishing book three, and whether that will be the absolute end, I'm not sure. But my publisher, Coffee House Press, is doing this particular book. It's 800 pages, and so they're freaking out, you know. And they said, can't you go back and edit and, you know, pare down the former books, maybe throw out stuff? And I looked at it, and I just can't. It's all, in a way, you know, the epic is basically the story of your tribe, the story of your time. You know, there's a lot of information in it, a lot of research. It's rhizomic. I've used that word a lot, and collage-like, et cetera, et cetera. It moves through these... You know, it's sort of very male, the book one, and moves into the hermaphrodite, and I'm not sure where book three goes exactly, but it plays on those themes. It's a little like a Indian raga in form, where you lay out certain themes and then you play them in different ways. So I said, I don't think I can do that. And I'd like to do, you know, I like the idea of the tripartite. And in a way, now that I'm working on the fight, I can do that, what you're saying, you know, sort of rethinking and recalibrating and do it in this new form so that some of the themes are echoed in the final section, if it is indeed that. So that's how I'm working with it. So I'm putting everything into this book three, which is probably 350 pages, something like that. But going back in my son is the real Virgil in the poem. And so to change, you know, the sense of his time from an infant, you know, he's grown with the poem. And that's key to me, that's the integrity of that remains. And maybe, you know, some days you can look back at old work and just get the horrors and want to destroy it. And you know, we'll see. I mean, they'd be delighted if I started monkeying with it. And, you know, what's the famous Marianne Moore poem that was cut back to, you know, three lines?
Poetry.
Yes, poetry. It'd been 3 pages or more, 6 pages. So maybe something like that will be reduced to its essence. But I've realized I can no longer, I'm not doing very well with the short poem. Every project now is a book. So Manatee, you know, started with a little song and idea and then had to be, you know, play out. And Marriage, a Sentence, similarly, and Structure of the World. So these last three books outside the EOVIS project have also been long pieces that move in time. Thank you. Thank you.
Thank you, Anne.
Wow.
Aloud Audio is presented by the Library Foundation of Los Angeles and made possible through support provided by the Ralph M. Parsons Foundation, the Annenberg Foundation, City National Bank, contributors to the Stay Home and Read a Book Ball, and Donna and Martin J. Wolf. Media support provided by KUSC 91.5 FM and KCET. Aloud theme composed by Larry Karish.